And we're live from WOTC Studios in lovely Renton, Washington. We have a great show for you today. I am your host, Jake Tice, brand manager to the stars. And we're going to be talking all about FutureSight today. So this is one that you can't miss. You got to let your buddies know about, because we're going to give you away an exclusive spoiler card on this site. And we're going to be talking to some of my favorite WOTC people on the planet. Up first, we'll be talking to Jeremy Jarvis, Magic the Gathering art director. And in the second segment, the ever-popular Mark Rosewater and Mike Turian will be joining us. So first, Jeremy Jarvis, I hear you're under the weather. You dragged your carcass in here today.
That's crazy talk.
Yeah, heavily medicated and ready to talk about FutureSight.
we can edit out when I go off on a Sudafed tangent.
You're more or less medicated than a standard art director.
more than a standard art director, less than a standard artist. How's that?
So I think last time we talked to you, you were a junior art director, a deputy art director in Time Spiral land?
So, yeah, in Time Spiral, I had some commissioning duties based on Jeremy being out of office, and I kind of proxied. And so for Time Spiral itself, I commissioned the Magus Cycle and stuff like that, odds and ends, basically very, very late changes. In the set, Jeremy was just not, literally not in the office, and so that fell to me, and that was kind of the first time
that was
I had commissioned.
Right. So FutureSight is your first
foray. FutureSight
foray.
Is my first cradle to grave.
Yeah, so, it's your baby.
It is. It is my neo-future baby.
So, and what a baby, a big baby. What all went into the process of coming up with FutureSight? How did you guys develop it?
Well, so FutureSight is, of course, the third act of the nostalgia block, past, present, future. Past is easy. Literally, you know, giving the reprints and the time-shifted bonus sheets, very, very on the nose. Planar Chaos being alternate present, okay, well, we found ways to communicate that. We reflected that with the roster of artists as well. Time Spiral, you had a reappearing artist that we've not heard from in a while. Planar Chaos, we had the presentation of artists that are of the style of contemporary magic, and just had not happened to, you know, be part of the stable before. So you kind of have that, yes,
oh,
this
cool.
is a believable extension of magic, and this is a way it could have gone, and okay, alternate present. For future.
In the year 2000.
Yeah, exactly. Now that it's 1984. For FutureSight, that was the one that made us nervous and creative all along. Because when Mark would come down and say, hey, the third set's future nostalgia, we would quickly reply, Mark, that doesn't mean anything. Which, of course, he does not respond well to and just tells us we're crazy.
I think the second segment, I'm going to start with that question and have him go for, you know, a good hour.
Yeah, that'll, I'm sure that wouldn't take an hour to.
So what does future mean from an artistic perspective? I mean, is it lasers and metallic cats crossing the stars?
Those were cut from the file early on.
Oh, okay.
No, there was a real danger. One thing we were concerned with in creative that we tried to communicate to Mark from the very beginning was the danger of FutureSight simply being Planar Chaos 2. Mm. With Planar Chaos being basically the way you communicate, alternate is just by what you haven't seen before. Okay, well, it's not this. It's something new, showing you something new, showing you something new. From FutureSight, it could have well been the same thing again, just showing you something new. And now mechanically, they're different things. But visually, to make that mean something, we had to go out of our way to make sure that you know, that we kept FutureSight off the toes of Planar Chaos and vice versa. So some of the ways we decided to do that, and we did not want to go laser swords and ray guns and that sort of thing. It's still part of the Time Spiral block. The set is still magic. Magic is not a, you know, sci-fi game. It's a fantasy game with, you know, a little bit of overlap there, here and there, stylistically. But we went with things like, you know, artist selection we used to very heavily communicate. You know, FutureSight is very much a bookend to Time Spiral, where Time Spiral, we brought back illustrators that are nostalgically tied to the game.
Sure.
In future sight, we not only deliberately did not bring those people back for the most part, but we used a very, very big selection of new artists that have never worked for Magic before.
I noticed one crusty old-timer name missing and one Jeremy Jarvis. I didn't
see
in the book.
Yeah, the first set I get to take from concept to final, the first thing I did was art direct myself out of it.
drank a big Metamucil and watched all the young guns come
yeah.
in.
Yeah, pretty much. So one of the things when I was picking artists to use for this set, we wanted guys to convey that kind of edginess, the possibility, and some of these are guys that we use already. Like we wanted Alexei Breklaw, obviously did the packaging, did incredible packaging art, and that really, his packaging pieces are a great kind of visual metaphor for the set. Kind of that's the heart of what we're going for. Alexei, Justin Sweet, John Foster, Vance Kovacs, Chippy, Brandon Kikowski. These are guys we've seen before, but we really let them be kind of the visual heart of the set, as well as, you know, Jim Murray and Greg Staples and Kev and Dave Kendall and guys that are more traditional painters, the digital guys, and that sort of just edgy, not concept art, but that kind of feel really permeates this set. And
so they kind of drive the heart of the set together.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things we shoot for is not only to keep, you know, each block away from the next. You know, if you can confuse a piece of Mirrodin art with a piece of Kamigawa art, that's not super creative. And I think we're very, very good at that. And beyond that, like if you lay down a Future Sight card and lay down a Planar Chaos card, I think it's great that you can tell the difference. And I think you can't, like going through the God Book, Future Sight is a different thing. It's still Magic. It is still the things we love about the game, the things we love about the art. But it's a little more tactile in certain ways visually.
Some of the landscapes and some of these cards are just absolutely amazing to me.
Yeah, we have some of the best land guys in any industry.
In particular, we give out a number of cards to different magazines and different websites to preview for the set. The French magazine Lotus Noir featured Tellaria West.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
So, and that was something we were really, really hot on when we were talking to Mark about, you know, this doesn't mean anything. Future nostalgia doesn't mean anything. You know, it's one of the things that we knew could communicate future, you know, hit both of those notes was to show the places in recovery. Mm. Like we've spent two sets of Time Spiral with monolith spires for mountains and these, you know, blasted salt plains, and to show those places start to recover. So I had actually done some concept illustration, I believe after Future, I'm sorry, after Planar Chaos was commissioned. So several months out before we got to commission Future Sight, I had done some early concepts of that. And one of the first things we did in creative was talk to the designers and developers to say, hey, we were really hot on a cycle of lands that we can show these places people recognize as this blasted Dominaria recovering, so you know time has passed, and literally hit that kind of future note. And there are little moments here and there, even within some of the creature cards and the character
sure.
cards, where you can see recovery taking place on the non-time shifted cards. So non-time shifted cards creatively are your Dominaria in some subtle forms of recovery. And, you know, we talked about some of those, the artists like Justin, Vance, and Alexei. Those guys, you know, Kev and Greg, artists you're more familiar with. When you get to the time-shifted cards, that is more possible future of the game.
Sure.
Than
let's talk about the elephant in the room for a minute. Let's talk about future frames.
Okay.
That's a huge, huge creative jump in the pool there. And one thing I heard from your team quite a bit when you were compiling these is you were showing the players a possible future.
Yeah, everything. They're little vignettes. Like, we would look at the, you know, obviously look at the file and like we always do, try to come up with a concept. But it was like, if it's on the time shifted sheet, then just anything but the style guide, anything but the style guide. Maybe it's crazy gelatinous crystal world. Maybe it's nuts, you know, nutso fungus world. Maybe it's whatever.
So they're kind of like little movie posters for things we could do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
As well as these little vignettes from crazy places, new creatures, this sort of thing, that's where a lot of the new artists reside, bringing these new guys in and saying, hey, show us something new. And again, just to communicate that possible breadth of the magic multiverse, you know, kind of one guy on one card at a time. Which is pretty different than what we normally do. Typically, it's very risky when you're inviting new artists in, just because we're a very demanding IP, very demanding intellectual property, because there's so much history of the game, so many cards that have been printed, so many things we do on purpose or do not do on purpose. It's very hard to catch guys up to speed. And
it's really amazing when they do, too, when you see things in Future Sight that are just slam dunks from
when it clicks, yeah. It clicks. But it's always risky. So typically, if you look through the sets, like trying out 2 to 3 guys a set is about what we've done in the past, usually. And it's totally the art director's discretion. But because, again, it's risky. And sometimes there are guys very talented in one arena and they just don't get what we're going for, or just something doesn't click.
How many artists do we try for Future Sight?
I actually did the count. There are just under 70 artists in Future Sight.
Wow.
I think there are literally 68.
Wow.
Which is not to talk too much about Peanut, but that's like 2 more artists than I used in Peanut, which is a big set. So Future Sight, we really went all out. And like of those 68, like more than 20 are guys we've never used before. So it's close to a third of the set are guys that we've never seen before, new artists. And typically, you know, we'll try out 2 to 3 new guys a set if there's somebody that we're always keeping our eye on people, always looking, and, you know, artists refer us to other guys. We go to shows to find new talent. We keep our eye out on the industry. And, you know, we flirt with them a little bit. We, you know, hey, you want to do a card and go out to lunch? You want to whatever? You know, and you have to do a card or two for a waiver.
You have your little box and stick with carrot.
Exactly.
Want to do a couple magic
cards? And then we're like, you want to come up for coffee here? But, I mean, we jumped guys in on the deep end. Like Darken had not
amazing.
Worked for – he's done great work for some of our RPGs. He's done great work for other games. Very stylish guy. Great work for Hecatomb, and just completely jumped him in the deep end. Like, hey, you want to, you know, create Black Blade's heir, one of the most popular characters in the game, and, you know, just kind of try to recapture this magic from scratch on your first go. Same with Michael Komark. Dude's done great work other places. Oris. You know,
yeah.
Quoting, here's, you know, a little bit from here.
Those are big cards, too. Those are big risks.
They absolutely
are.
They
don't sink under the radar.
Anthony Francisco did that fantastic piece, The Magus of the Future.
Mm.
And he's a video game guy, like does concept work for video games. And so we were jumping him in the deep end, going, hey, first time out of the gate, here's your
Another thing that I think some of the new players will be really interested in are the full pane cards.
Oh, right. So, yeah, and that was in the file, actually, very early on, that there were going to be quote-unquote vanilla creatures, you know, no abilities, no text boxes necessary with no ability. So let's just print up a full-frame creature. So we, you know, we're pretty good and creative. If we see a little window that we can shine, we go out of our way to make sure we do. And that cycle, again, like Alexi's packaging, those recovered lands, if there is a third poster child for this set, both tonally and visually, and how broad, you know, seeing new things, new places, like that cycle is is definitely the third poster child for the set, I think.
So you're happy?
I am happy. I'm very, very proud of this set.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of the set. We get to be very, very broad on the time-shifted sheet with the artists involved and the places.
What kind of thought went into just designing that frame?
Oh, so, okay. So again, you know, the past is easy. You just literally show cards from the past. Alternate present is, you know, fairly easy as well, because it's like, okay, things you know, but a twist on it. And again, for future, it's easy to kind of, I don't want to say lowbrow, but kind of shoot low. And I mean, we could do something that looked quote unquote futuristic. And
like little like, HBO lasers.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Exactly. And that's not what we wanted to do. So what we did kind of, I got stuck in my craw early on, just the idea of ergonomics. Like, okay, ergonomics do say future, and it doesn't have to mean ray guns. Like, architecture, you know, your cell phone design, chairs, like automobile design, like ergonomics do, you know, very rarely do things get less ergonomic as time passes. So that idea, that really drove those card frames. The idea of, okay, when they're fanned across in your hand, how much information can we elegantly display in a very direct way? And this is kind of in the Planar Chaos article, I talk some about the, you know, getting split second to read and just basically sequentialism within a still image, that if you read left to right, top to bottom, then even a still image you look at left to right, top to bottom. So we basically utilize that left side, everything. If you fan it across, you can see we have new icons for card type, so you don't have to, you know, you can get it at a glance, fanned across your hand, as well as, you know, that. The mana cost, keeping the colorless mana on the same keel, so you can, you know, as you look across your hand, okay, 6, 2, 4, 3, you know, keeping things lined up and conveying as much information possible, you know, in again, a very elegant way, and really going for that utilitarian, but in a graceful way. So, you know, and then just little bonuses about little touches here and there, like being able to see a little bit of the art through the text box, just little things we haven't done before.
Transparency.
Right. Keeping things a little more swooping, keeping things a little more rounded. And
the colorless frame on Ghost Flame I thought was really interesting, too, from the future.
Yep, that
arts.
Was another one. We were just like, what does this mean? Okay, well, it's, you know, is it takes red mana, but how much does the frame need to communicate that? Because we actually communicate so much more with the frame than people think we do. Like, sure, they think just little changes here and there are easy things, but it's like, no. From pin lines to, you know, text color to icon color to just where the elements are. Like, all of these things, how much texture, you know, if it's colorless, then texture actually denotes what card type it is. Like, artifact is something different than, you know, that kind of silver frame does not just mean colorless to us. It means artifact. And so, okay, well, here is something truly colorless. What do we do? And so eventually it's like, well, you over-commission the art, you get a full piece of art, and you let the frame kind of be ghosted and colorless, and let's see the art through that frame. So, which I think is very exciting, and yeah, it's a fun card, and I think it actually reads as a colorless burn spell.
This has been a lot of fun, Jeremy. I don't want you to be a ghost. don't get away. We got to get you in the booth here more often than just when we have awesome new stuff to show people.
It's a good time. Yeah, it's I don't have trouble running my mouth.
Thanks for coming, Jeremy.
Yeah, thank you.
After the break, we're going to be talking about the mechanics and guts of Future Sight, so be sure not to miss out.
Every Friday night, casual and competitive Magic players get together at hobby shops across the country to hang out and throw down. Because Friday Night Magic offers camaraderie, competition, and collectible prize cards you can't get anywhere else. This month's exclusive prize card is Basking Rootwalla, a crazy little creature from Torment that packs a punch and can be played for free if you manage to discard it. But you can't crush your opponent with it if you don't get it in your deck this month. For more about Friday Night Magic or to find a participating store near you, just go to wizards.com/FNM.
The Future Sight pre-release is less than a week away. And I thought, out of the goodness of my heart, I would just clue you in on some of the keywords here to help you out. So without any further ado, I'm going to rattle some off. Absorb, Aura Swap, Bloodthirst, Buyback, Convoke, Cycling, Death Touch, Defender, Delve, Double Strike, Dredge, Echo, Equip, Fate Seal, Fear, Flanking Flash, Flashback, Flying First Strike, Forecast, Fortify, Frenzy, Graph, Grandeur, Gravestorm, Haste, Hellbent, Indestructible, Kicker, Lifelink, Madness, Morph, Poisonous, Protection from Black, Protection from Red, Reach, Regenerate, Scry, Shadow, Shroud, Sliver Cycling, Split Second Storm, Suspend, Swamp Walk, Trample, Transfigure, Transmute, Vanishing, Vigilance, and my favorite, Wizard Cycling, are all featured in this set. So, Mark Rosewater, Mike Turian, what are you doing to me here? What's going on?
Well, we tried to get more in, but we just couldn't fit, I think, any more than...
Yeah, where was Protection from Converted Mana Cost?
Oh! That was it's spilling over. It's breaking at the seams here.
Yeah, some people have complained that this block didn't have as much innovation as some previous blocks.
Was that what you're
right? I would say it does. We just saved it from the last set.
Yeah. Fear not, we are not out of ideas, if you can tell. There are many, many keywords and
for
a
those
lot of
that,
awesomeness.
For those at home, that was a cool 52 keywords there. So if you're typing up your little spoiler sheet, your little hands are going to be tired.
And before the set comes out, as of Flamer Chaos, how many keywords exist in Magic?
Is this like counting jelly beans? I will say 39, 45.
56.
Okay.
So,
there's 56.
So it's close. We were close.
Yes. Wow.
We tried. I mean, a lot of the keywords, obviously, if you read, I mean, are of those 56, but there's a few new ones.
I don't know. I wouldn't say a lot of them were. A couple of them were. Yeah.
So how did... I'm struggling to think of how you guys designed this. I mean, what remote Tibetan monastery did you guys go to produce this set?
Well, the funny thing I think about this set is... So I came up with the idea of... We started with the idea of time as sort of a theme, and we quickly stumbled upon the idea of past, present, future, because how do you divide time into three parts? And it seemed pretty obvious. And everybody immediately understood past. People got, oh, I get it. We'll bring back things from the past. We're going to have the time-shifted cards from the past. Everyone seemed to get that. Then we had this whole idea of this alternate reality present, and less people understood that. But luckily, Bill got it. Bill was the person who was the lead design on Planar Chaos. Then we got to the future set, and I knew what I wanted, but literally, it was like no one, I was speaking in some foreign language, no one understood what I was talking about.
Future nostalgia.
Future nostalgia, exactly. So a lot of people say, well, how are you nostalgic for the future? And the way I answer this is, what nostalgia means when I use it is that you're using what you know of the past to sort of, you bring it to the thing you're approaching. You know, like when I see something and I go, oh, I'm nostalgic for it, it means something to me because it has a meaning in the past. Mm. So clearly, Time Spiral, it's that kind of warm nostalgia. Like, oh, remember this card? Oh, remember that mechanic? For Planar Chaos, the nostalgia was in, we were sort of showing you the what if. And the what if doesn't mean a lot if you don't know what it normally is. Like Black Wrath, Damnation isn't that exciting if you don't know White Wrath exists.
Sure.
You know, a lot of the disorientation came from, you know, this is what you know, but not exactly what you know. And so for the future, I really wanted to do a lot of extrapolated, meaning a lot of the cards, even stuff you've read, you know, stuff like Sliver Cycling. You've never seen Sliver Cycling, but you have some idea what Sliver Cycling is, you know, if you've been paying attention to Magic.
Gotcha.
And really a lot of what we wanted to do in the set was sort of take Magic and show where things you know would evolve to.
So my favorite Mark Rosewater relating with future nostalgia quote is the Coke can analogy.
Yes, so the Coke can analogy.
Could you drop that on our audience
here?
Sure,
sure. Sometimes when I'm trying to explain things to other R&D members, I love my metaphor. So I came up with what I call the Coke can metaphor. So nostalgia in the past is like I show you an old Coke bottle, like, you know, a 20s Coke bottle, and it's ornate, and you can tell it's a Coke bottle. It's got a little Coke swoosh, and, you know, you can, and maybe you remember the old Coke bottles, or maybe, you know, you look at it and you realize, oh, this is old, you know, it's unfamiliar to me, but I recognize it as being an old thing. The alternate reality Coke bottle or Coke can to me is, imagine a Coke can, but it's green. Everything you know is a Coke can, but instead of red, it's green. Mm. And the reason that's disorienting is you know a Coke can's red, but the green version looks like a Coke can, just something slightly off, being it's the wrong color. And to me, the future Coke can is, if you imagine sort of science fiction films, one of the, actually the trope of science fiction films is, they'll show you things you know, but sort of extrapolated. Like, it's the Coke can, but something about it is different, you know. It splits apart and the liquid floats up in air or something. Something futuristic about it. And that you recognize it as a Coke can because there's elements that say Coke, but other parts of it you're like, I've never seen this before. This is strange and different. And the reason science fiction does this is it helps ground the, you know, sure. the viewer in that, oh, you know, here I am in the future, but oh, they have McDonald's like they do in, you know, Fifth Element, or they have Taco Bell like they do in Demolition Man and such.
Oh, I love a Demolition Man reference. a little Dennis Leary. Yeah. So one thing that I heard from the R&D angle is this isn't the rote future coming up. This is possible future, right?
There's not one future. What we were doing was we were peeking at many possible futures, some of which will come to pass, some of which won't come to pass. And I tended to group the cards in three categories in my mind. There's some cards that, like, I know exactly when and where we're doing it. Like, hands down, this is something we plan to do. We're giving you a little sneak peek, and we're definitely doing it. There are some other cards that are kind of us red herrings, if you will. Part of keeping you guessing is there's some stuff we really aren't planning on doing, that we're sort of, it's fun teasing the audience, but we really don't have any intention on doing this. And then there's the middle ground, which is by far the largest, which is we're not really sure. Maybe we do this, maybe we wouldn't. And a lot of the set, what I think is kind of a very cool sort of metagame element of this set, is we're going to see what the audience thinks of it. Like, if the audience really latches onto something, I guarantee you that's more likely to be from the near future, you know, than from the far, far away future.
So you stepped on a lot of little butterflies and went back in the time machine each time to see what happens?
Exactly.
Okay.
Hopefully fascism won't take over.
one thing that I also heard, too, is that a lot of cards that people are seeing that are leaking out have some mirrors to great designer search cards. Was that intentional?
So here's what happened. The great designer search, when it started, we were done. Design was done. But here's why there's such a large overlap. What I said is we wanted to be nostalgic by showing the present extrapolate into the future. So we went down a lot of obvious veins because we were trying to say, well, here's things that you know, and here's where you could go with them. And I think in the great designer search, that's one of the easiest places to go because, for example, Morph. Every time you've ever seen Morph, it's been on a creature. And so, you know, it's not hard to say, well, what if you took Morph and put it on something other than a creature?
Like
say,
a land.
A land. Oh.
Mike, you missed your beat for unison.
Three,
two, one. Land.
It's not that hard to come up with the idea of putting Morph on something else. And we knew when we made it, it's not super innovative, but it's different. Like, it's something that we've always wanted to do and someplace we planned on going, but we hadn't got to yet. And so, for example, I think our preview card today is exactly that. So, here, Mike, why don't you do the honors?
So, it's Zoetic Cavern. It's a land. It taps, add one colorless to your mana pool, and has Morph 2. So, it's a land with Morph. You play it out there like any other Morph, and it attacks and blocks like a creature, and then, surprise, it's a land. Oh, you know, damage on the stack. I save my land. It's like, ha ha ha, you get that awesome Morph moment.
Yeah, I saw a frumpy-faced Forsyth with throwing a shock at a Morph land, and it cheated back, I think, to Eric Lauer's back row, you know?
And it's the exciting part of Morph. It's like, is it a chroma under there? It's like, no, actually, now I'm going to start tapping it for mana. It's just like, ha ha, got you.
Well, it's also fun, like, you know, I put 2 damage on it, and you're like, well, too bad it's a land, it doesn't really care.
Right, yeah. Right. And it's great, too, because, you know, you have it, it's like, oh, you need a second or third land, you know, you can just put it down face up and just, you know, use it for mana. So it's a lot of fun. It gives you that Morph moment and something that, I mean, you're talking about the great designer search. It's like, oh, you saw some of that. It is the obvious place to go.
These are near futures.
And then, well, I don't know about that, but
future.
But you know, in a totally fun way.
So this was your first time, Mike, leading a dev team?
Yes, this was my. I had worked on Guild Pact and Cold Snap and been a playtester for everything since Ravnica, but this was my first lead. Yeah.
Ironically, my first design team ever.
What was the file transfer like from design to development? I mean, was there...
Well, so here's the... I mean, not the public will ever actually see this, but I... So on the time-shifted sheet, for those who don't know, the set's 180 cards, 81 of which are time-shifted. So it has a larger percentage of time-shifted than either of the previous two sets. And I documented for each of the cards on the time-shifted sheet for the development team, like, where I saw the mechanic, meaning here's where I think we're doing this, or look, we're never doing this, or this is something we're thinking about, and I sort of documented how I saw each thing so the dev team could know sort of how serious or crazy certain ideas were. And by the way, the dev team, there are plenty of cards that we've turned in that got killed. Like the rules killed a bunch, and...
Yeah, I haven't seen Mark Gottlieb make so many rules comments on a card, you know, since I've been working here. It's always, Mark's like, this will not work in Magic. And so that does in the cards.
I think they've talked him off the ledge a few times.
Here's the best part. Gottlieb was on the design team.
Yeah. Right.
And so multiple times, he as a rules manager had to kill cards he as a designer made.
Yeah, which, you know, I mean, he's done before, and it's... I mean, I think that's the key to be good design is, you know, you push the limits and sure. You find out, like, hey, can we do this? And then he has to come back as
so
the
Mark
manager
put a sock
no.
puppet on each hand and had them argue for a while?
Yeah.
He does that normally, so okay. I don't do
yeah,
that.
Business as
we,
usual.
We couldn't tell the difference there, but...
One of the things mechanically that I see in a lot of the cards is mix and match, where a couple different mechanics
yes.
teaming up together. Was
so,
that...
Yeah, so what happened was the time shifted cards are all, you know, cards from the future, dun-dun-dun. But we needed stuff for the non-time shifted. Like, there's 99 cards that aren't time shifted. And so one of our rules was we put all new mechanics on the time shifted side. So there's no new mechanics on the
sure.
the non-side. And so we allowed ourselves a couple things. One is we brought back two more old mechanics. So Scry and Cycling came back.
What
and
was
then,
the design choice for that, for those
well,
two?
Well, it's the future. And so Scry is... looking into the future. And also Cycling from, I mean, this is a little more philosophical, Scry's a little more straightforward, but Cycling is kind of trading in the present for the future, like the unknown.
Okay.
Like, I have this thing, I know what it is. Do I want something, some random thing that I don't know? And so we felt like those two cards really embody the essence. And so one of the things we were trying to do was, how do you feel future-y without showing things that are new and different because all the new crazy different stuff's on the time-shifted side? So one of the things that I came to was during the Magic Invitational, before it ended up going online, I used to make cards for the event. And I went to Bill, who's the head of R&D, and I said to him, I want to make some cards for the event. Can I do that? And Bill said, yeah, you just can't make any cards we'd actually print. And so what I came up with is I could take old mechanics and mix and match them because, well, what's the chance of... you know, Madness and Cycling showing up in the same, you know, it was very unlikely. So I knew that I was making cards that pretty much we couldn't make because, or if we could make, it'd be years down the road and Bill wouldn't bother me about it. and then Gottlieb, during Unhinged, made Blast from the Past and Old Fogey, which were two cards that just had a whole bunch of old mechanics on it, and those went over really well. And so it dawned on me that one of the things that we could do, which sort of had a future feel in that you've never seen this before, was to take old things and mix and match them in new and interesting ways. And I knew that there were all sorts of very cool, you know, interactions between them. In fact, this is a funny story. So Zvi Mauschewitz was on the design team. So what I said to Zvi is, I said, here's all the mechanics we've ever done. Make me a list. Combine all of them. And then tell me, he graded them from 5 to 1. 5's like, this is awesome. They combo really neat. And then 1 is like, this doesn't work. And, you know, you don't want these together. And so he made a list of all of them. And we got all the 5s in and a good chunk of the 4s in.
Oh, cool.
You know, so we really, if you look in the ones we mix and match, like, they go together. Like, there's something about them that, you know, is neat. For example, one of the ones that's out there has, you know, Buyback and Convoke.
Oh, okay.
And so you can use the Convoke to pay for the Buyback. So, you know, it's pretty awesome.
So one thing that I hear over and over from developers is that they will take something that they gravitate towards to design and blow it up into a cycle. So they'll find one card that in particular they like and cycle it up. Or is there anything that got promoted?
The got promoted like that. The one thing, one card, Blade of the Sixth Pride,
it's the full paint art.
It's a full paint art 3/1, and we decided, you know what? I mean, Future Sight, yes, it has, you know, a lot of keywords, a lot of mechanics. Hey, we really want to show off full art, right? We really want to show off this new frame. What a great way to do it! Make a whole cycle of those, right? Full frame, because I mean, like Mark was saying, there's a lot of mix and match in the set, and that's fun. But I mean, those sort of are the cycle. It's just like, oh, here's, you know, Buyback and Convoke together, or Cycling and Madness together, right? And I mean, they're not by any means a tight cycle, but and we thought with like the full text art that we could just be like, hey, let's show off the card frame. You know, here's one future alternative potential card frame, right? Let's see what we can go with.
Is it also is it the only 3-1 for two?
It is. Yeah. Well, and as developers, you know, Aaron Forsythe loves to say he likes to find the niche, right? What haven't we done? And 1W3-1 has never been seen before in Magic.
Vanilla 3-1 has never been seen before in Magic.
Yeah, vanilla 3-1. Wow. Yeah, not even, right. And so we tried to find that, you know, as much as we could in other colors. What haven't we done, or what, you know, what does Magic, you know, what is Magic missing in terms of vanillas?
So, yeah, it's this set has a lot fewer cycles than normal because. Normally what we do in Magic is we take some element of what we're doing and pick some neat thing and then sort of spread it out and find gotcha. All the different ways we can do it. And in this set, we did the exact opposite. Like, for example, normally we're not going to do a keyword unless we have enough cards to support it. So, like the smallest we've ever done in the keywords, maybe on 5 cards. Usually it's, you know, more than that. And this set is full on the time-shifted side of, like, there's a keyword on 1 card. That's it. That's the only place in the whole set you'll see that keyword.
Right, like Mark likes to joke. It's just like, oh, you like this mechanic? Oh, you love this card? It's like, well, it's the only one. Sorry.
See you in the future.
Yeah, see you in the future.
The it's possible like, oh, future.
Yeah.
I remember Brian Schneider had a funny analogy for the set. He said most times when we build a block in a set, you get the full banquet meal where we have appetizers and main course and dessert and soup and salad. And he said this set is tapas. You get lots of spicy little dishes.
Yeah, that I mean, that's a good analogy. It is. It's exciting because, you know, with mix and matches and just with the whole set, it's just like, you know, oh, in the Morphland here, it's just like, this is exactly what people were talking about the Morphland when Onslaught came out, right? And it's just exciting to have a chance to be like, here it is, here's your one spicy dish.
You've realized some boys' dreams.
Right.
Yeah, the story I like to tell is, once we are, basically when editing is about to hand off the file to Typesetting. So once it's sort of out the door from R&D, we all get together. On Tuesdays, we have our Magic meetings, and that we'll show, like, everything's in frames and it's art, and we'll sit and see the set, sort of a finished version of the set. And it's our first chance to sort of see everything come together. And usually there's some people in that meeting who weren't directly involved in it. So the first time they've ever seen it is sitting in that meeting. And so I remember showing the cards, and a few of the people, like Scott Johns, I know, for example, who have never seen the set before, sitting and watching, and, like, the lights come on, like, they're, like, in a blank stare. So, like, my brain has melted.
I think yeah. Mike Donay is still sitting down in that room.
No, and the amazing thing about Scott, you know, in particular, is I never heard somebody say, wow, so often. He, like, every new image would come up, and it'd be, wow. You know, and you just hear him in that same tone of, wow. Wow, right? And that's what I think led to the blank stares. Just, you know, he was blown away.
Yeah, the other running joke that I've mentioned a couple times, but I think it's kind of funny, is, you know, they've joked that I snuck a third unset through. That, I mean, there's not... Most sets kind of restrict themselves from time to time. And, you know, that...
This is your final chance to sneak through? Are we going to see Spike tournament players sneaking through?
No. I'm sorry. But what we're trying to say is that most sets, kind of the barriers are very tight, what you can do and what you can't do. And so, like, the nice thing about doing an unset is no barriers, whatever. I'm going to do crazy things. And this set really was the closest we've ever done to having that set of an unset where we just pushed boundaries. We just did things that either we had said before we'd never do, or we said, well, we're kind of scared of this area. Normally we wouldn't venture so close to the cliff, but this set we will.
We built a little bridge off of the cliff.
Yes. Well, it's sort of like the Grand Canyon now, the other thing where they build a bridge that goes so you can, you know.
I would be terrified of that, but not as terrified of future sight.
You think you were terrified? I had to make sure that everything came together. And
yeah,
you know, it's scary seeing so many new mechanics and so much going on, and just being like, because normally it's okay, suspend, right? What does suspend mean? How does suspend work, right? And here, I mean, those 52 keywords you listed off, you know, a lot of them are on powerful cards and. Just like, what does it mean? Like, you know, what is delve, or what is, I don't know, just
or a swap,
right? Yeah, just how does that play with Magic?
Yeah, I've heard the set lovingly referred to as the market research set. So we can put everything out and see what people like. And
yeah, well, there's another great opportunity here in which there's things. It's once we sort of introduce something to Magic, it's introduced in Magic, and so it's hard sometimes to sort of sample something. Because the mere act of putting it out means it's there. But this set has a very special quality to it that's unlike really any other set, in that we're kind of saying to people, well, we're testing the waters here. Here's things, right, from the potential future, things we might do, and that we felt like we could do cards that if we later decided it was a mistake, that we never want to do that thing, we felt like, well, we clearly said this is maybe we'll do this. We're not committing to doing any of this stuff. And so if we later decide we don't want to do it, we can say, hey, that was...
Possible future. Disclaimer.
And so, I mean, the thing I like to let the public realize is people always say how much they enjoy stuff like, you know, selecting Nth Edition or, you know, when they get a chance to make a Magic card, you know, and that, you know, you make the card. And so this is the first time we've done something of that ilk, if you will, but it's actually in the set. It's not like online, it's actually in the set. Like, we have put cards out, we want audiences to respond to them, and literally, if people really like something, I guarantee you its chance of surviving, I mean, I'm not, no 100% here, but, you know, if people really respond to something, that says something to us, and that definitely increases the chances of us, you know, if it making the real future rather than the potential future.
Well, very cool. Thanks for joining me, guys. I really appreciated this. It's really illuminating.
Sure. We'll see you at the pre-release, Jake.
Yep. And we'll talk more about the pre-release after the break as we hit our calendar of our events, so stick around.
If you're 18 or under, you can play Magic for cards and college in the Magic Scholarship Series. Start putting your skills to the test at an MSS Qualifier Challenge, where you'll get an alternate art foil Whirling Dervish card just for showing up. Kick enough butt and you'll get a piece of $1,000 in scholarship, free Magic cards for a year, and an invitation to play in the championship, where you'll play for a piece of $100,000 in college scholarship money. Season 2 picks up on March 24th, and the championship in Baltimore is on July 28th. So get your deck in order and get ready to school your opponents. For more information about the scholarship series, go to wizards.com/MSS.
And we're back. So I hope you've enjoyed our podcast up to this point, talking all things Future Sight. And suffice it to say, in the calendar of events, I'm going to tell you more things Future Sight. The Future Sight pre-release events are coming up April 21st and 22nd. So it'll be your chance to check out all these wild and crazy cards that we've talked about in the show and that you've seen streaming down at the bottom of the panel of this. If for some unforeseen reason you have to miss the Future Sight pre-release events, caught in a bear trap, caught in two bear traps, you can hit the Future Sight release events, which will be held in local stores near you between May 4th and May 6th. Also up this month is Pro Tour Yokohama, April 20th through 22nd. So it'll be coinciding with that pre-release weekend. So you'll get to see some of the pros' thoughts on it via the Pro Tour Yokohama webcast, which will be starting 9:45 on Saturday night, April 21st. Pro Tour Yokohama is Time Spiral block constructed, so it's also a great chance to see kind of what the Time Spiral and Planar Chaos breakout cards are, and what you should be filling your trade binders up with and playing and getting the inside pro scoop on that. Also coming up rolling this month is the Pro Tour qualifier season for San Diego. These are two at a giant events. Last podcast we talked with Mark Gottlieb about some of the rules interactions, so that would be a great refresher if you and a buddy want to go and earn free airfare out to San Diego. To participate in those events, you have to find a tournament organizer running one near you. Those events end on May 20th. So be sure to get your act together and go and compete in one. I'd like to thank my guests on this show, Jeremy Jarvis, Magic Art Director, Mike Turian, Future Sight Lead Developer and Developer All-Star, Future Sight Lead Designer and Magic Head Developer Mark Rosewater. The show is produced by Greg Tree Collins, and spinning the dials is the lovely William Meyer. Please join us again next time and next month as we talk about a whole suite of new topics. And I'd also like to bring it to your attention that by discussing in the message boards, you give us a great forum to hear what you want and what you need and what you want to see in upcoming months. So please, please, please tell us what you need. Take care.